Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins. To episode number 15 of C4 from CHB. That's Chris and Clay's Canucks Hockey Commentary from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce on Twitter, joined, as always, by my faithful co-host,
Clay Emo at Canuck Clay. Happy to be faithful to you in a blogging-type way and happy to be sitting beside you. And we are faithfully joined by
the man through the glass. It is Matt Lee at MattLee980. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me back on the show.
Well, considering we have you back every episode, and we talk about this every episode, we should probably think about a new moniker.
I don't know. So we maybe regular host.
Yeah, you know,
the host.
The
host joined by his two sidekicks.
Easy
across
there.
The glass.
Well, see, this is what happens. We get into a real studio, and all of a sudden, Matt like thinks he knows what he's doing.
Well, I'm here directing traffic with the hand signals out here, and you guys
practicing your dance moves for later tonight.
Maybe. It is the long weekend, after all.
Yes, the long weekend. I don't know what else to say, and it's nice to have a long weekend in February, but I'm just thinking in terms of the Canucks. This is a real long weekend with the Olympic break and all that.
Yeah, but it couldn't come a moment too soon, don't you think?
Well, maybe it came a moment too late.
Well, speaking of things arriving soon, Chris, you got something going on in about 5 weeks.
Yeah, I'm getting married, guys. I am going to be off the market.
Ladies, don't all leave the bar at once now.
Yeah, I think that was a seller's market there, not necessarily a buyer's market.
Whoa, that's an insult.
So as a guy who's single, and Clay, you're married, you can tell Chris what he's in for right now for the next whatever years of his life.
Yeah, Chris, I know we've already been talking a little bit off the mic, but on the mic, I'll simply say, learn two phrases right now. Yes, dear, and I'm sorry.
Yes, dear, I'm sorry.
Pretty good.
Yeah, see, I've been practicing in front of a mirror.
Oh man, you guys are so screwed.
Well, I'm sorry. He's been married for a while. That's obviously working. I'm just taking the sage words of wisdom.
That's right. We should also mention, speaking of marriage, that Sean Emo is also with me behind the glass as well.
Yeah, well, he's our producer that we're gonna bump you with.
He's the heir to the throne.
Yeah, he's also probably got a lower contract demand in place. So.
Probably doesn't have a no movement clause like I have in right now.
No, JJ's gonna come and ask you to waive it one of these days.
Surprised Jay-Z hasn't asked any of us to weave ours.
Well, hey, I just keep... All I read about getting traded is on Twitter. It's like I'm getting Rick bonused.
Well, it's a bonus having you here. How's that?
And now, a flashback to the week that was for the Vancouver Canucks.
I'm no doctor, but... They got to start thinking about shutting Henrik Sedin down here. But you can see him at the end of that shift again in the crease, doubled over and labored his way to the bench. And holding him. Desharnais picks up the puck. He moves in with Plekanec. Desharnais cutting it on the goal. Centers Plekanec back for Desharnais. It's in off Edler's skate. Up with it. Bozak again slides the puck across. Penalty coming up against Vancouver. Bozak. And Ringsdyke stationed in front. The extra attacker is on a delayed penalty call against the Canucks. Kessel shoots, he scores!
Well, guys, since the last time that we met, the Canucks were about to take on the Phoenix Coyotes, which I think all of us had stated they had to win, which Vancouver did, albeit 5-4 in overtime. We obviously speculated the Canucks would win four of their last seven games leading in the Olympic break. Man, I think it's now obvious that we're just bloggers.
Clay, I think, has something to say first.
Yeah, not our finest moment from a prediction standpoint. And I think we're going to get into this, but obviously injuries, fatigue, the coach, everything has finally caught up to the Canucks. And you know what makes me sad, you guys, is I remember when we used to play other teams in the past few years, I would actually feel sorry for fan bases of other teams because we would just pound them. And now they're almost feeling sorry or laughing at us. Don't you guys feel that difference this year?
that fans are sorry and laughing at us. I don't think there are fan bases out there that are actually sorry the Canucks aren't doing well.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. I was going to say a prime time example of what you're talking about, Clay, is remember how much fun we used to poke at the Nashville Predators for not being able to score goals? And if you look at the standings right now, the Canucks and Predators are actually tied in terms of goal scoring this year.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's what's changed. Like, all of a sudden, I guess there's injuries, obviously, at play, you know, new system, new coach. But the Canucks couldn't buy a goal. In fact, I'm almost surprised that when they do score their one goal in a game, it's not getting waved off.
I mean, what is it, 4 goals in the last 4 games? It's not acceptable by any standards. And I'm trying to think of which of their most recent losses have stung the most, because there have been a lot of candidates for worst loss on this road trip.
Well, why don't we talk about that? In the last 5 games, the Canucks are obviously 0-4. We see a 4-3 loss to Winnipeg, a 2-0 loss to Detroit, a 3-1 loss to Boston, a 5-2 loss to Montreal, and to put the cherry on top of that bitter Sunday, it's a 3-1 loss to Toronto. So of those 5, which hurts the most?
It's a giant crap cake of losses is what it is. I can't tell what's worse, because you look at Boston and then you look at Toronto. Those are 2 teams that you never want to really lose to. But statistically, the Canucks had the Detroit game there for the taking. They were only down 1-0, is that correct?
Yep,
and then they added the empty netter.
The empty netter at the end, yeah.
So the fact that they were that close, one goal, I mean, they could have got a point out of it at least is what I was hoping.
Well, you look at of those 5 games, to me, the bitter pill to swallow is the loss to Toronto. Boston's got a solid team. Montreal was up to play us. Winnipeg, that was the first time the Canucks, I think, had been to Winnipeg since 96. So they were obviously up for that game. And that was really the closest of the 5. But that 3-1 loss to Toronto was hard to watch. The Canucks are holding on to a 1-0 lead, just praying that that'll be enough. And the whole time I'm watching the game, I'm like, okay, it's only a matter of time till Toronto takes the game over. And of all people to actually do it, it's Mason Raymond. And that hurts me the most.
I concur, Chris. That game against Toronto, because we were looking at, yes, we lost a few in a row, but at least we can go into the break on a winning note, or at least put in a solid effort, come out of there with a win, beat our rivals, the Leafs. And yeah, it stung because it hurt. I mean, it hurt the most because that was one game that we really needed to win. But how about that crowd in Winnipeg, boys? You watch that game, and they were cheering for every single thing right from the opening faceoff. It just makes you wish that we had more of that, I think, in Rogers Arena.
Well, I mean, I got to give credit where credit's due. It's the Winnipeg fans. I mean, I remember we were at that Winnipeg game just before the holidays at Rogers Arena, and I mean, the fans celebrate their ownership group during the Canadian anthem when they scream True North. As to fans, though, I'd like to draw to your attention, there were 3 fans that I thought were pretty impressive. One was the guy who had the cutout of Tortorella behind the bench screaming with his finger point.
Yes.
That was pretty cool. And the 2 dressed up as Waldorf and Statler from the Muppet Show.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, that's the 2 old dudes that sit up at the top and they're like, oh that's yeah, good. Yeah, it was yeah, okay. Yeah. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that good. Oh, it was horrible. Boo.
Nicely done.
That was a pretty good impression.
They were like my favorite characters.
We can tell.
You got to put into perspective, though, when it comes to the Winnipeg crowd, that the team had been gone for so long that, of course, they're going to treat every game like it's their last. So, because, of course, they've already had one team taken away from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, back then, the Canadian dollar wasn't doing so well, and that was one of the reasons Winnipeg left. Well, I mean, it's probably a topic for a different podcast, but the Canadian dollar's not doing so well anymore. I think it's even more important that those fans really come out and support the team. Not that there does appear to be a sign that that's going to slow down. The last thing I want to just talk to you about that 0-for-5 road trip is the fact that you had Luongo taking the game upon himself in the loss to, I think it was Boston, saying that he needed to play better. When the team's not scoring goals and your goaltender is actually saying, yeah, sorry, I let a goal in a 3-1 loss to a good team, that's a scary sign.
I'm not going to... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, go right ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, Chris, but at the same time, when is the last time Roberto Luongo, or Eddie Lack for that matter, has given the Canucks a chance by stealing a game? I don't think he's been bad. I think he's been okay, but I wouldn't give him an elite first-star performance for any of these last 5 games.
No, and I'm not saying that that's what he deserves, but it's come down to the point that if he or Eddie do not steal the win, the Canucks don't win.
This really is a very similar situation to 2007 when it seemed like the Canucks just couldn't buy a goal, isn't it? I mean, this was a team that was starved for goals back then. Their power play wasn't that good either. And, you know, there are a lot of parallels to this team and the 2007 team, it seems like.
Well, good on Luongo for trying to take, you know, some leadership by having that comment. Even Torts came out afterwards and said, no, it's not on you, or it's not on the goalie. We can't rely on him. But I think he was trying to just stand up as one of the locker room leaders and just say, hey, I need to be better, i.e. we all need to be better.
So if we're saying that struggling goaltending isn't the issue, I mean, there's probably a laundry list of things we go through. Like the first one is injuries. So far we've seen Henrik, we've seen Higgins, Richardson, Santarelli, Bieksa, Hanhus, Tanev. I'm surprised that the Utica Comets haven't actually been called up en masse to fill in all these gaps. When was the last time you saw the injury bug ravage the Canucks as much as it has just this season?
Yeah, it's been a while. This has definitely been one of those years where it seems like not only is the injury bug biting hard, it's like it's ripped chunks of the team right off of them. You have to remember, though, that this was an Olympic year. This is a new style the Canucks are playing. This is a new aggressive style that they're playing under John Tortorella. So really, those were two things that really spelled a recipe for this kind of thing to happen. It's remarkable that Henrik Sedin, the Iron Man, was injured. And, you know, Chris Tanev, who's always been known as that guy who can take a hit, no problem. And now he's out with an injured hand. And, I mean, the road that they've been on, all these road trips, has really seemed to catch up to the team physically. And I don't know if 2 weeks off during the Olympics is going to suddenly make the team a better team.
Well, you look at the injuries. I mean, Henrik's not going to the Olympics now. He was probably hurt well before. I think the rib injury is what did him in. And the fact that the Canucks, for the most part, it appears, may have brought him back too soon. Now, it's not to say that he wasn't cleared to play, but it's quite obvious he wasn't taking faceoffs and there was still a problem. And that if Hank is now shutting it down for the Olympics, the problem didn't resolve itself well. But yeah, take a look at the Olympic break. Who gets healed? Well, Santarelli doesn't. Maybe Tanev back a little bit early with the broken hand. Any broken bones take 4 to 6 weeks. You know, we saw the return of Hamhuis just before the Olympics, but he's obviously going to Sochi not 100%. So does he come back in any playable condition? I don't know where the injury bug goes away.
Yeah, and again, like you mentioned, there's a lot of guys who are going to be on the shelf even after the Olympic break is over. I'm not optimistic about this team's chances, not just to get healthy, but just to make the playoffs. I think that even if Henrik comes back, we don't think he'll be 100% until the end of the year when he gets more time off. The other thing is that the Santarelli injury really bugs me because of the fact that they have Henrik and Kessler down the middle when they're healthy, but Santarelli, again, is done for the year. They don't have a legitimate guy who can be a third-line player for them on the wing or at center, and I think that takes away a lot of the depth that the Canucks need to score goals in the first place.
Which is a nice segue, because in the same stretch, the Canucks have scored 7 goals, opposition scored 17. So if you're seeing a disparity of 10 goals over 5 games, you know, the Canucks need to score 2.5 more every game to hopefully, you know, cash in a win. And in the road trip here, we saw them do that once, and that was losing to Winnipeg.
That's a good point, Chris. You got Bieksa, Hamhuis, and Tanev, 3 of your starting 6 D-men at the start of the season out, and you just can't replace that kind of depth. And yes, Corrado and Sauvé and Weber, they're all game. Rafael Diaz in his first few games as a Canuck, but you simply cannot replace that quality. And it goes back to the old adage of you can never have enough D-men, especially in our case, healthy D-men.
You didn't even mention Andrew Alberts. What has he got to do to get love around here?
Well, I'll be honest. I actually forgot about Alberts and only just considered having watched the Toronto game. Like, oh, I wonder how Alberts is doing, because it was a concussion that knocked him out. Mm-hmm. We've actually heard very little for a player who's been concussed. But that's that defensive depth, which we were lauding earlier in the season, now seems to be non-existent. And we're starting to see some defensive lapses. That Mason Raymond goal, he had both Garrison and Hamhuis sprawling on the ice before he goes and fires it over the top of Luongo's shoulder. It doesn't help that you also then have Alex Edler scoring goals, you know, albeit inadvertently, against his own team. This was the Canucks' strength. That was their bread and butter.
Goals in their own net?
No. It was their defensive sturdiness. Just because they weren't scoring goals didn't necessarily mean they were out of a game, because the defense would hold them in it. Now, it doesn't seem like they can hold anything together.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree. This... it's just been a bad couple weeks, hasn't it?
But Chris makes a great point, you know, and when we were talking about defensive depth, it's scary when it's the guys like Garrison, Edler, Ham Hughes that are making the mistakes.
And yeah, not, I mean, these are glaring mistakes that they're making too.
Exactly, Matt. Not the young guys. And you could almost excuse or not fault the young guys because they are that. They're young. They're rookies. They're in their first couple years. But to have our highest paid guys going and making those mistakes, then you know you're in trouble.
Is it a combination of mental focus and physical fatigue, or is it one or the other for you guys?
I just think it's confidence. I think they don't have any. I think they're getting away from just smart, fundamental hockey plays. I've seen a couple quotes recently about, you know, just not paying enough attention to detail. I think that's what it is, more than fatigue or anything. It's just focus and attention to detail.
Well, the last thing I just want to talk about is we now see Tortorella return having served a suspension. Did it throw the team out of sync? I'll be quite honest, I don't think it did. The Canucks were already starting to tumble towards the planet well before.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I think having Mike Sullivan be the head coach behind the bench was a lot different than having John Tortorella, because I've heard some people talk about how Sullivan and Gullitson are usually the guys that the players, you know, get the pat on the back from, mm-hmm. and the job well done sort of thing. John Tortorella is normally the disciplinarian, so it's hard for Mike Sullivan to suddenly turn on the switch and be the bad guy here, and that's why I think maybe things were a little out of sync in terms of structure.
Okay, to your point, okay, I'd agree. I think that there was still more to it, but one of the noticeable changes was that when Sullivan was coaching, Cassian was getting far better minutes, and I actually thought Booth and Cassian were looking quite well as a pairing. Tortorella comes back, and Cassian's minutes go straight to the grabber.
So I don't know. I guess it's a difference in terms of philosophies on how to raise Zach Cassian, because mm-hmm. I guess Sullivan's train of thought is to raise Zach Cassian by giving him more minutes, more opportunity, whereas John Tortorella wants Cassian to earn those minutes and bring him along more slowly.
Sure. So have we reached that point in our season where now we're going to be looking for moral victories every night?
It seems like that. Does it not seem like if you score one goal a night, it's a not bad night? And if you score zero, it's unacceptable.
What a horrible benchmark to have. <I know.
laughs> That is the unfortunate truth, though, is it not?
It is. The fact that we look at the last five games and that 4-3 loss to Winnipeg has us thinking, well, actually, that was a pretty good game. You know, the Canucks were in it. And then we look at the other games. I mean, they may have been in it, but it's just like whoever scores first, game over. And even against Toronto, Canucks score first, and yet we don't have the confidence that they're going to be able to hold that game out. So, yeah, moral victories all around.
Half full, half empty. Analyzing which Canucks are overachieving, underachieving, too good, too bad, and why our analysis means absolutely nothing.
It's gonna be legend! Wait for it.
You guys miss me?
No.
Thanks.
Well, I just wanna say, with me, you keep promising and you never deliver.
Okay, I'll step my game up starting next time.
Well, you better, because you know what? We expect a lot out of you, Clayton.
No, we really don't.
That's true, we don't actually know.
What we get out of Clay, I'm pretty much happy with.
Thank you.
It's a bonus.
Well, she does look better, she does sound better, so really, why am I here, honestly?
See, if I take the handlebars off, I totally look like a predator.
Well, Matt started his Movember beer, but he started last November.
Worst prize ever. Did she just say it was pretty porn starry?
Boring story.
Oh, okay, never mind.
I've always been told that I have a face for radio.
Dairy! Legendary!
Here we are, half full, half empty. Might as well be called half full, half completely disgusted.
Yeah, way to call it how it is.
It's really bad. I mean, come on, look at the last five games on the road trip as a whole, and you can't be happy with anybody individually. Is there anyone that you could individually blame for the Canucks' lack of success?
Any one player?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a collective effort.
It really is a collective effort, isn't it? But who stands out right now the most for you in terms of not helping this team win?
Not helping. See, I was actually, this is catch 22. The player who I think has actually been showing the most of all people is David Booth.
Heyo!
But I'm also going to say that that's the player the Canucks needed to have been counting on earlier on.
Heyo!
He's not doing anything.
But the numbers aren't there for David Booth, isn't it?
Well, they should be. And actually, you know what? Let's take David Booth out of the equation. Daniel Sedin.
Yeah.
Like that's, and I'm not trying to knock him, but he has not been the same since the elbow.
He needs to be our leader, especially with Henrik not here, right? He's the alternative captain or assistant, whatever the A means, but he's not doing what he needs to do. And the Canucks need to look to him to lead, to score, and him and Burrows, they're together. I would put both of those two guys as two of the prominent factors.
Well, in okay, sure. But if you were to pick one of the two, to me, Daniel is the one who needs to be producing. You know, Burrows was always sort of the result of the equation of Henrik and Daniel.
Do you guys think that Daniel is injured, or is it just a lack of confidence right now for him?
I think, well, I don't think it's an injury. I mean, it doesn't appear that his game has slowed down.
He just looks slow in general, though.
Well, but when the confidence isn't there, you start, I mean, case in point, and I'll use Burrows as an example. He's going in on a 2-1 with Schrader, and what's Burrows thinking? Pass. He wasn't thinking shot. He was thinking pass all the way. That seems to be the way Daniel's playing. When did Daniel ever think pass outside of passing it to Hank?
Mm-hmm. Again, Alex Burrows, again, he's goalless in 28 games this year. He's played just 11 games since returning from that broken jaw. Is this guy ever going to score a goal?
No. Never again.
Empty netter, maybe.
Well, but that, I kid you not, when David Booth scored the empty netter, everyone's like, oh, the monkey is off David Booth's back. In this case, not at all. I don't see any reason that Alex is going to score a goal.
It's the big thing for me that I noticed was on the Saturday 2-on-1, like you said, and he just whiffed on the finish. And that was something where I think to myself, if Alex Burrows is 2011 Alex Burrows, it's in the back of the net, no problem.
But that's the thing. He wasn't even thinking shot. If you look at the replay, he whiffed on the pass back to Schrader. He did not want the puck.
I don't know, man.
Matt, you're a high-level athlete. Maybe not as high-level as Stoney
last
time.
Oh, I'm definitely a high-level athlete.
But have you ever gone through one of these confidence issues, no matter how high or how low the level of competition?
Believe it or not, I don't have the best slap shot. And as a defenseman, that's pretty essential. And
so you're like Chris Tanev.
That is exactly it. They call me Matt Tanev these days. But here's the thing. When I get set up for a one-timer and we're on the power play, I want to think slap shot. But then a part of me just sort of double clutches in stride, and it goes into this like slap pass sort of thing instead. And that happens from time to time, especially when you haven't, you know, delivered a great shot or a great goal in a while. So in that case, yeah, it does happen. Mentally, just things don't seem to click. It's like, you know, trying to force a square peg into a round hole, and sometimes it just doesn't go for you. So I can empathize with Alex Burrows' situation. That said, sometimes you have to take the risk and you have to start going for the shot, even if it means you're going to whiff on it completely.
Sure. I can't help you there. I only ever played street hockey, and I never had a slap shot on the ground.
All right, well, let's move on then. Ryan Kesler, 2 goals, 3 assists during the 7-game slide. If there's anything to be taken out of positively individually, is there anything that you'd like to say about Ryan Kesler that's positive? The numbers are there, like, decently anyway.
Yeah, but watching his play, he doesn't look like he's playing with that chip on his shoulder. He doesn't appear to be angry or agitated.
I don't know. Well, you saw him score the goal on Saturday against Toronto, and there looked to be some sort of relief on his face when he scored the goal.
Sure, but it wasn't, I mean, I guess you got to take him where you get him. That wasn't it wasn't the sniper's goal that we're accustomed to seeing, but he doesn't seem to be playing with that edge. And that's, I'll look at like Jerome Iginla back in the day. I remember when him and Matias Olin used to get into it, and once Jerome got woken up by a big Olin hit or even a fight, Jerome played a whole different game. He took the game over and he carried that Flames organization on his shoulders. Kesler, I think, is made from that same mold. And it's as if there isn't that stick of dynamite that he has that's just going to blow. And without it, he's not the same player. He's not dominant.
The other thing I want to bring up with Ryan Kesler is, despite the fact that he scored the goal hit and he was pretty pumped about it, he didn't have that look on his face that said to me, you know, guys, get on my back and I'm going to take us to this win. Do you find that anybody on the Canucks has that look on their face at all? Because it seems like there's no real leader who's willing to get this team over the hump.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt. I don't see anyone ready to put the team on their shoulders and just kind of go and say, come on, and just show that emotion after a goal, after a big hit, after a great pass, whatever it may be. But to your point about Ryan Kesler, you guys, you know what? The one thing I noticed, one thing I'm anticipating, I just have a sneaky feeling that he's going to be a monster in the Olympics and just do really, really well. I'm not sure how far U.S. is going to get, but I just have a feeling he's going to do awesome. And we're going to sit here and say, well, where was that the last month? And then he's going to come back, and maybe he will be the one leading the Canucks going forward. That's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm looking for, actually.
Well, yeah, maybe his hatred for Canada, as he had declared in 2010, will be what gives him the edge that's missing.
Chris Higgins, are we happy with what he's been giving us so far? 2 goals and an assist in that stretch. There's still some bang for your buck there in terms of what he's getting paid and what he's expected to do, isn't there?
Well, he's a third-line player, so how can we not be happy with what he's been providing? He's been providing third-line numbers. The problem is, as a fan base, and really the Canucks as an organization, have been expecting him to be providing, you know, second- to first-line production. So, you know, if we put our expectations aside, Chris Higgins has acquitted himself okay, and I'm not going to say anyone's acquitting himself well.
Absolutely. He's a very streaky player, up and down, and right now he's doing very well, doing his usual thing, working hard on the boards, always moving his feet, and I think he is the least of our worries, our collective amount of worries right now.
Let's keep the forward train moving here. It was the end of the Dale Weiss experiment a couple days ago, the Vancouver Canucks saying goodbye to good old Dale in exchange for defenseman Rafael Diaz. Your guys' parting thoughts on the era that was Dale Weiss?
You know, if Dutch Gretzky can get traded, anyone's on the market. I just had to throw that out there.
It was just the first of many?
Yeah. It's I hasten this back to when Gretzky got traded out of Edmonton. We started to see that organization shift. The difference was that Edmonton had one good year left in it. I don't think the Canucks do. It's interesting, though, because the comments had come out that Dale was a Dale kind of guy, not a team kind of guy.
And I think that stems from his, I wouldn't say rocky, but his bumpy relationship with John Tortorella as soon as he came in. I think Tortorella, as we saw with Dale Weiss getting scratched on a number of occasions this year, was shown that Tortorella wasn't going to coddle Dale Weiss. He wasn't going to just suddenly give him fourth and third line minutes. And I think Dale Weiss obviously wasn't happy about that. But the thing was, my thoughts on Dale Weiss is that he had the tools to actually be a pretty effective bottom six player, and for whatever reason, he didn't show that consistently enough, and I think that's why the Canucks traded him for Rafael Diaz, because they signaled that there needed to be a change made. Maybe his spot was lost to Kellen Lane, because I don't want to say Kellen Lane has set the world on fire, but at least Kellen Lane has been decent in a fourth line role.
Well, if you're a team that's thinking that they might need to retool, Kellen Lane is the obvious reason why Dale Weiss is then expendable. You know, if Lane's providing you, you know, that glimmer of hope that he'll be ready next season, you know, that's, to me, the smart decision to make, especially with the defensive troubles that they've had and the fact they got Diaz for essentially nothing.
Before we move on to defenseman, your guys' thoughts on Henrik Sedin skipping out on the Olympics. Obviously, it affects the Canucks on a very big scale because of the fact he's going to get a couple weeks off to rest and rehab whatever injury it is. I mean, we speculate it's a rib injury. So what are your guys' thoughts, Clay, especially, what do you think Henrik will provide once he's back on the Canucks roster?
I think it's a great decision, obviously, that was made in concert with him and Tortorella. And I love how the priority is obviously on the Vancouver Canucks, as it should be. Team Sweden, they might not. They need him. You can't lose a player of that caliber. But I think overall, this is a good decision. Obviously, when he comes back, who knows? I would love to think that after 2.5 weeks, he comes back and he's the Henrik Sedin of old. But you know, without any high quality competition for a couple weeks, it might take him a couple games to get ready, especially if he is playing right away. But I hope to see leadership. I hope to see great passing, great playmaking, and I hope to see him help Daniel and Burrows get out of their slumps. But I'm just thrilled that we're going to see a healthier, if not completely healthy, but a much healthier Henrik.
The two things I take away from this: one, that this is a sign that Hank is committed to the Canucks as an organization and the team, and two, how badly must he be hurting right now to be skipping the Olympics? And that's, I think, the scarier part, is he's hurt that badly that he feels he needs to shut himself down to heal.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, and the other frustrating thing about it is that Henrik Sedin probably came back too early from his rib injury. And the frustrating thing ultimately is that had he not came back early, he would have gotten an extra few days off before the Olympic break. It would have looked more like a 3-week recovery period for him than as opposed mm-hmm. to a 2 to 2.5. And you can't help but wonder if maybe that was a mistake on the Canucks, because obviously after the Olympics, the stretch drive is going to get even longer and it's going to be even more pressure filled because of the fact they're right now in the hunt for one of those last playoff spots. Defenseman, thoughts on Rafael Diaz in his limited stint with the Canucks? He's got a goal and an assist in his 3 Vancouver games. He's logged a ton of minutes in the process. What do you guys think?
I like him a lot, and I'll tell you guys a very, very quick story. I actually picked him up in my fantasy pool 2 years, or last year, when he, or 2 years ago, when he was actually scoring a little bit, And then, you know, guys laughed at me, and then I succumbed to peer pressure and I dropped him right away. But I've always followed him, and I think he's, you know, he's a decent skater. He's got that, he's got a really good shot. And I know he's a UFA at the end of the year, so we have to look at what this means long term for our team. But I think short term, he adds the depth that we need. He adds at least a bit of security back there. And he hasn't been a liability, at least to my eyes, in the three games he's played.
No, and I think the knock on Diaz coming here is that he was a soft defenseman, and as a defenseman, you obviously need to play a harder style of game. But we got Dale Weiss as on the waiver wire, did we not?
Yeah, I think that was shortly before the season began, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so if we pulled Dale Weiss on the waiver or off the waiver wire, and we've now turned him into Diaz, who's frankly a better piece to the puzzle of the current team, it makes sense that, you know, this is the route we go. And, you know, he's scored a goal, got an assist. He's, as Clay said, not been a defensive liability in the short times with the Canucks. And considering how many holes that blue line has right now, it's kind of nice to see some light at the end of the tunnel.
Let's say, hypothetically, that Rafael Diaz does help legitimize the Vancouver power play a little bit more. Do you have interest in bringing him back, especially if it's on a cheap scale? Because I can't imagine him asking for the world if the Canucks are interested in bringing him back.
The key word, Matt, you said was cheap, and we don't mean like ripping him off or whatever, but if they can sign him to even a 2-year or a 1-year, probably a 2-year at least, he'll be looking for. But if they can sign him to something decent, why not? You know, we have our other big D at $4 and $4.5 million right across the board. So if you can bring in someone a little cheaper. I know we had this conversation about Tanev last year, but yeah, I think if he adds a lot, they might be interested in bringing him back. I don't see why not. And then I can pick him up in my fantasy team again.
He's not going to do anything for your fantasy team.
Well, fantasy team aside, if the Canucks are interested in bringing Diaz back, and let's say he does come back cheap, I think that then bodes worse for a player like Chris Tanev returning. And I'm a big Chris Tanev supporter, but to me, the Canucks would then be looking at dealing him or have something in the works for one of their no-trade defensemen. It just seems to me he adds more depth than they necessarily need at the price they'd be paying to keep him.
What was the term on Chris Tanev's deal? Is it a 1-year or 2-year deal he's on?
I want to say Tanev was just a 1-year. He's an RFA at the end of the season.
So we'll be going through this again, and he has arbitration rights, I believe, on the next year.
And a quick aside, Chris, if the Canucks do not re-sign Tanev, does your threat to steal streak continue even when he's not playing with the Canucks?
No.
I can't wait until Chris Tanev goes to another team and he suddenly becomes a power play quarterback scoring 20 goals a year.
Yeah, and you'll be all thankful I'm not streaking.
Your marriage will be over before it even begins at that point.
Yeah, thanks for your support, yeah,
that's,
guys.
That's good advice.
The spotlight has shone very poorly on Alex Edler recently because of the 2 own goals he's scored. What do you guys think about him defensively, but what do you guys also think about him on the power play? Because he has a couple power play points in the last few games, so that suggests that maybe he's helping get the power play back on track.
Well, I'd like to draw your attention to the comment that I've continued to make podcast after podcast about Edler's mental state. It seems to me that I am being proven right in that regard, because just you look at his style of play and his body language alone, there's more to the story. Since his return, he's not been that bad. He's been nowhere near good. This is not the Edler that we grew accustomed to before he signed his current contract.
You know what I said 10 minutes ago about Kessler having a monster Olympics? I have a sneaky feeling that Edler is going to do the same. I know the last time he was in international play, he took out Eric Staal with that weird cheap shot, speaking of mental makeup.
Knee on knee in the tracks.
Yeah, but I think, you know, maybe the Olympics will be good for many of the Canucks players, including Alex Edler, and I would hope that he would come back a lot stronger, playing with a lot more confidence and scoring on the proper net.
You really think that Alex Edler could have a monster Olympics for Team Sweden?
Monster might be too strong a word. I think he'd have a good, productive one for sure. Absolutely.
I don't.
How come?
Because he sucks. He's been so bad lately. Defensively, he's just a nightmare. He looks lost, deer in headlights. Let me tell you something. From a guy who's made his fair share of mistakes defensively, I know when things aren't going well. And right now, as much as Alex Edler has been decent on the power play, he looks a little lost mentally in his own end. That's all I'm going to say on that. How do you fix the Vancouver Canucks long-term right now? Because if they're bound to miss the playoffs this year, and there is a good chance that that could happen, what do you call a reset in your eyes? I mean, Mike Gillis promised a reset, and really all we got was the Corey Schneider deal.
Well, as to the solution to fix the Canucks woes, I know the chatter in our CHB group has been lots of booze. specifically to the organization. No, I don't know how they reset. I mean, Gillis has said to anyone who's listened, let alone any time he's asked, that he will not approach a player to waive either a no movement or a no trade clause. And if that's the case, and I'm not saying that the Canucks have more of these clauses than any other team. I've not done any of the research. I also agree that it is something that the team has provided to them as part of the negotiation to keep the cost down. We have to consider that at the end of the day, the power rests with the player. And if the player is not going to approach the team and Gillis is, you know, sticks to his word, who is there to remove, to rebuild? Like, where's the market?
Isn't it crazy how when we heard about this reset last year, that we might have been actually talking about this season and not last season or last summer? It's crazy. It's taking probably 9 months longer than we expected, but I think we're on the way, because the last podcast I remember us talking about the Canucks being in this weird place where they're not going to be absolute buyers, they're not going to be absolute sellers, but as they drop further in the standings, I could see them actually doing a bit more selling. But you're right, Chris, we got all these guys in no trades, we got Gillis saying he won't move any of them, but I think the only way to make a move and to make substantial changes in our roster is to get one or two of those guys to indeed waive. And maybe they don't want to be here if they feel that the ship's sinking. I don't know.
Well, if we just quickly go over who the Canucks can't move, that's Daniel, Hank, Ryan, Alex, and Higgins. They all have either no movement or no trade clauses. That's up front. On the blue line, Edler, Bieksa, Garrison, Hamhuis are all tied into NMCs or NTCs, and then Luongo. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not a vast number of players, but right there, that's the quote-unquote core.
That's two-thirds of your salary as well. But mm-hmm. to further of Clay's point, I mean, Alex Edler is the more movable asset, I think, if you're looking at anyone in the core. And the thing is, if he doesn't want to be here, and if the Canucks don't want him here, who are they to say that this move doesn't get done? I think Edler has trade value, despite his poor year and the fact that I crapped all over him about 5 minutes ago. The thing is, Alex Edler is a good player when he's on, and I think if he's... And the other thing is, he's on an affordable contract. The thing is, if he doesn't want to be here and if the Canucks don't want him here, I think that there's a trade to be made. So that's all I'll say on that.
There comes a moment when my heart must stand alone on this lonely path I've chosen, like a house that's not a home.
All right, let's just get to the good part.
Chris, you can sit down now. I appreciate that patriotism, though. Wow.
Well, I just wanted to show off all the body paint that I put on. That's why I ripped my shirt off. I am sporting a maple leaf.
Well, you must have been cold coming down here, though.
Yeah, it was a little chilly.
All right. Speaking of chilly, the Canucks were a little cold going into their break. Everyone's break, because now it's time to turn our attention to the 2014 Sochi Olympic Winter Games. And Canada doesn't play until Thursday. They go against Norway on that Thursday. The very next day, they play against Austria. And then they get a one-day break, and on Sunday they finish their group play against Finland. So that's Norway, Austria, and Finland. Not the toughest group ever, but we'll get into that. Let's get our initial thoughts on Team Canada. Let's start with Steven Stamkos being shut down 2 days before they had to finalize, or at least get ready to go. And Martin St-Louis, his teammate, coming in. Matt, is that the right decision?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, if Steven Stamkos was not 100% healthy, he should not play. That was the thing we operated under when he was named to the team. If he wasn't ready to go, he had to be replaced. And in this case, Steven Stamkos was not ready. My heart bleeds for the guy, because he should be a lock every year, every time, 9 times out of 9. And, he worked really hard to get back. Mm-hmm. He really did. The thing is, Martin St-Louis should have also been on Team Canada from the start. I don't think there should have been any question about it. I don't know what Steve Yzerman was thinking, but I think that Martin St-Louis is the kind of guy you want to have on the Olympics just because of how big of a heart he plays with.
Just on the fact that St-Louis did not meet the team from the get-go, I don't think necessarily it was Steve Yzerman. Well, he might have had the final say. We've all heard about the committee that selects the team, and it just occurs to me, considering the emotion you saw on Yzerman's face when he was being interviewed by, I think it was James Duthie, you could tell there was more to the story. But Stamkos not coming back, to your words, Matt, he worked so hard. In fact, he was targeting this, Saturday is his return to get that one game under his belt. He was saying how his injured leg actually felt better than his healthy leg, and x-rays came back and obviously shared a different story.
Well, it's crazy. Stamkos obviously pegged in perhaps to play on the top line with Crosby. Where does St. Louis fit in the lineup now, Matt?
I mean, I don't know how much action Martin St. Louis is realistically going to get, because if you think about it, why should a guy like Martin St. Louis suddenly get a chance to be on a scoring line, for instance, or any line for that matter, when a guy like Jamie Benn has been on the roster from the get-go? So in terms of what should and shouldn't be done from a morale standpoint, you'd think that Martin St. Louis might be starting the Olympics from the press box. That said, I think a couple players will obviously work themselves in, and then they'll go from there and see who should start, who should play, and who shouldn't. So I think Martin St. Louis will get a chance to play, but I think there's also a decent chance he doesn't finish the Olympics.
And one tidbit about St. Louis' addition, it came at the expense of Claude Giroux, who a lot of people thought would be the other maybe go-to guy. And Chris, I want to run this by you. Flyers chairman Ed Snyder just went on a rant. He basically slammed the Olympic break, saying it's horrible timing. Why do we do this in the middle of a season, especially when guys are playing well? And, of course, he talked about his own player, Claude Giroux, who he said should have made the team in the initial cut and is better than half the players on the roster. What do you think of that? And are you surprised that Giroux didn't get more love, or at least the spot?
Well, someone needs to remind Ed Snyder how the Flyers did after the last Olympic break. But I see that more of as a GM sort of grandstanding for his player. It's not so much that he's speaking on behalf of the NHL. Why are we in the Olympics? The NHL is in the Olympics because they can see it turning a big dollar internationally for them. That's the only reason that they're there. Giroux not making the team? We had this discussion when you guys were sharing, you know, who was on your team, and I kept saying, oh, everyone makes mine, because Canada could legitimately ice Canada A and Canada B, and potentially have Canada C being a competitive team.
Claude Giroux, I don't know if he's better than half the guys that are on the Olympic team, but he definitely deserved to be on the short list. I'm not going to say he should have been on the team. That said, from a media perspective, I love that Ed Snyder went out and said what he did, because that we're still talking about it, obviously, and this was a few days ago. Ed Snyder is one of the most vocal guys in terms of ownership and managers in the NHL, and him just saying what's on his mind is just him saying what's on his mind, and I think that's fair of him to say. He has his opinion. He'll let us have ours, and we'll go from there.
Awesome. If not Martin St. Louis, let's talk about the offense. Where's Team Canada going to get its offense from? Who do you guys anticipate the offensive leaders to be?
Sydney. I really went on a limb there, didn't I?
Yeah, way to reach, go beyond your comfort zone there.
Yeah, I and Crosby is obviously the definitive leader. I actually feel that Team Canada's blue line is going to be generating a lot of the offense, just because if you were to consider how you're going to play Canada, you want to shut the forwards down. While the international ice is obviously a lot bigger, to me, coaches, we're going to coach your team to play more of a trapping, sort of hold them up style, and that's where, you know, the Canadian defensemen, being so offensively gifted, are going to be able to start firing those pucks and going to be the offensive weapons.
For me, from a forwards perspective, I'm looking towards Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry to really be one of those anchors on the offense, because of the fact that those guys are really lighting it up in the NHL right now. They're on arguably the best team in the league right now. They have insatiable chemistry with each other. They're probably not the guys who are going to be the main focus for opponents' defenses. I mean, Sidney Crosby is going to inherit that, right? So if Sidney Crosby is not the guy carrying the mail for Team Canada, I believe that Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry are in prime position to be putting up a lot of points for Team Canada during the Olympics.
Awesome. Let's move from the forwards then to the D. Who will be our anchors on D? We have some new players, you know, Pietrangelo coming in, Bomeister replacing guys like Pronger and Niedermayer. But who will be your anchors? Will it be those guys, or will it be the steadfast guys like Weber and Doughty and Keith, who were there last time?
Well, I think Weber is their number one defenseman. The homer in me wants to say that Hamhuis will be reunited with Weber, and therefore you have your number one defensive pairing. But Doughty and Keith, I'd love to see them on the Canucks. To me, they play with a
I'd like to see all seven of the defensemen on the Canucks, for that matter.
But it's the snarl that they play with, right? Like, they play with that edge, and they, to me, in the international game, yeah, sure, it's more run and gun. It's a lot riskier to play with that snarl, but It's an intimidation factor. Not only is the team that you're playing against looking at that red maple leaf on your jersey, they also know they're playing against some of the best NHLers, best hockey players in the world, and they don't like you that much. That's where the Doughty and Keith factor comes
from. I'm glad you brought up the Drew Doughty thing. I think he was one of the best stars in the 2010 team, and he's going to do so again during the Sochi Olympics because of the fact this is big ice we're playing on. Drew Doughty excels on big ice. We've seen him in playoffs past and in the Olympics past. He has the ability to rush the puck up on his own. He can carry the rush on his own with the puck, and I'm really interested to see if Drew Doughty can be one of those guys who can go coast to coast with the puck. And the fact that he has the size to back that up shows me that he could probably be a big force on the Olympics for Team Canada.
I'm with you, Matt. I was watching some of the 2010 Olympics, and to see on the smaller ice how good of a skater Doughty was, and even Keith is a very underrated skater.
And,
so,
and you had to remember that I believe Drew Doughty was doing it as a 19 or 20 year old too. Yeah. And now that he's got one Olympics already under his belt, I'm very excited to see what he can do the second time around. I don't like Drew Doughty, the player for the LA Kings, but you gotta love him when he plays for Team Canada.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going to draw into the age fact that he's one of the younger defensemen, and there's really only two that are younger than him, and yet, yeah, he's got the games under the belt.
Awesome. Speaking of D, let's talk about our guy, Dan Hamhuis. Just coming back from injury, he's one of the eighth defensemen. A lot of people pegged him as number seven and number eight with PK Subban. You guys, how much is this guy going to play, both in the preliminary and moving forward?
I know I said that I believe all the forwards will get a chance to play. I don't know if that's the case for Dan Hamhuis. I think that there's no questioning that Dan Hamhuis is outside the top six right now. If he plays, he'll get a chance to play, I believe, with Shea Weber. But the thing is, he's not only banged up a little bit, he hasn't exactly played well when he has played. And I think that's going to play into Mike Babcock's decision of whether or not to play him. So for me, I could conceivably see Dan Hamhuis getting maybe one or two games, and that's it.
Prior to his recent stretch of play, I would have actually said he was the fifth or sixth defenseman. But I think he's now played himself onto the bench or press box in this manner. And considering the depth that Canada has, the only reason he gets on the ice is injury.
Let's be honest. His play has gone off a cliff along with the rest of the Vancouver Canucks. So what reason does Mike Babcock have to play Dan Hamhuis if he's in a funk right now? It's not like he's going to get on the plane to Sochi and it's suddenly going to turn his game around. That's what I think.
Yeah, I just can't see him unseating any of the, actually, I hate to say it, all seven guys that are ahead of him.
But yeah, I can't see him playing over a guy like PK Subban either, because Subban adds that different dimension that Dan Hamhuis does not have.
I think the only wild card is of the eight that are listed, I would say Dan Hamhuis is by far the most defensive of those defensemen. And if for some reason Babcock decides that he needs that stay-at-home blue liner, that's Hamhuis. But considering that offense is not his game, he should not be on the Canucks power play. He won't be in Sochi, obviously.
Hypothetical question. If Dan Hamhuis, or if Team Canada is playing Russia in the quarterfinals as they did in 2010, and we know the offensive dynamos that are on Team Russia, would you be comfortable playing Dan Hamhuis in the quarterfinals against Russia, even if he hasn't played a game in the Olympics?
You know
what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
here.
Like, no, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I only would if one of the other two, one of the other six guys or seven guys are not going well.
Yeah, so just if I get this clear, he's not played a minute of time until they face Russia.
That's correct. But he's again, like you said, one of the guys who is a defensive anchor who can shut down some of those top line talent on the Russian team.
But let's say you put Hamhuis out there and he helps shut down one line. Russia's significantly more than one line.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, you're actually risking more having not seen him on the ice prior to that.
But are you comfortable playing a guy like PK Subban over Dan Hamhuis when PK Subban arguably isn't as defensively sharp as...
Oh, if it was a matter of choosing between one of the two, it's Hamhuis for sure. But I'm working under the premise of him actually getting on the ice. Like, to me, if Subban's been playing minutes and he's, that seventh man on the bench, he still gets in over Hamhuis.
Matt, you asked the question. What do you think?
Probably not. Again, like I said, I don't think Dan Hamhuis is going to get very much action. It would have to be some sort of injury that derails the blue line for Dan Hamhuis to see action on the ice, in my opinion.
All right, let's go from one Canuck who might not see a lot of ice to one who definitely will. And let's talk about the goaltending, you guys. We saw the two best goalies in Canada go at it earlier this week, Carey Price for Montreal and Roberto Luongo for the Canucks. We know what happened in 2010, Brodeur starting, Luongo coming in, replacing him and going the rest of the way. What do you guys anticipate happening this year?
Well, I believe we're going to see two goaltenders guaranteed. I mean, whoever starts the first game is not playing in the second game. I don't think we're going to see the drastic shift that we did see in 2010, where Brodeur essentially was pulled in favor of Luongo and had that shaky Olympic games. I believe whoever plays better out of the first two games is the goaltender they run with. And the only reason that they would switch is that goaltender was extremely shaky in that third game.
So if Roberto Luongo, let's say that he starts against Norway on Thursday and he plays so-so, he lets in a couple goals, let's say, and Carey Price gets the start on Friday versus Austria and he also plays so-so, who do you start against Finland?
Mike Smith?
Well, that's not how this works, Chris.
No, but in case in point, you look at since the goaltenders have been named, statistically speaking, Mike Smith has been the better goaltender.
But how much can you go off of statistics?
Well, no, fair enough. I think it's Luongo's position to lose. But if you've seen a real so-so, I'm not sure on Luongo, and then you see a real so-so, I'm not sure on Price, and you're Mike Babcock, aren't you thinking in your mind, well, I maybe should, because I, you know, if they at least have these two wins, is that when you start to experiment with Mike Smith? Or are you actually going to go and say, well, I'm going to hope that one of these not-so-so goaltenders works out? Because if that's the case, it's not the second goaltender, it's the first goaltender.
Well, you got to remember, though, after those three games, it becomes the quarterfinals that you're likely looking at for Canada. So then you have to pick between the three. And can you really go off of one game from all three of your goaltenders to say that they deserve to play over the other?
Well, If in that case, no. But if you have Luongo so-so, Price so-so, and let's say you go back to Luongo in game three against the Finns, and he comes up with another so-so effort, are you now going to go and say, well, he got us by, so...
But now you've run out of games to test your goaltenders.
Which is why I'm saying Mike Smith. If you see that much disparity and the two goaltenders aren't showing, like, they're bringing their A game, you have that one game left to try it out. You can't risk it at that point, and then you play the best of the three, the one you think that gives you the win.
I don't see Smith getting in. I hear what you're saying. I see even a two so-so outings, I think you go back to so-so Luongo and go with him.
Another hypothetical situation here. Let's say Roberto Luongo pitches the goose egg against Norway. Does he suddenly get to play the rest of the games, or do you really put Carey Price back in the net?
No, I think you put Price. Norway's the first game, right?
Yeah.
No, I think you still. I think they're going to stick to it, and you give Price the second game and not worry so much. It is a back-to-back, too, so I wouldn't worry so much about wrecking Luongo's momentum. I would say stick to that one and two, and then unless Price does something amazing and matches the shutout, you go back to Luongo for game three.
Yeah, and I'm with Clay on that, although the other thing that we haven't really even discussed is the fact that not only are they playing back-to-back Thursday then Friday, they're playing at 9 p.m. local time in Sochi. The fact that the games are going to be on at 9 a.m. our time on the other side of the planet
is... Which is good for us.
Well, good for us, but you can't imagine what it's doing to their, you know, their internal clock, saying they're both all going to be well off. So you got to give that opportunity to decompress, rest, and prepare for the next game.
All right, let's talk about really quickly the three groups, and I want your quick predictions. So the way this is going to work is they're broken up into three groups of four teams each. The team with the best record earns a bye. That's your top three. And then along with the next best team, there's your top four. The other eight, they get reseeded, they play each other, and then those four winners come up and meet the first four that were waiting, in essence, that first round bye after the qualification games. Group A, Russia, Slovakia, Slovenia, and the United States. Group B, Austria, Canada, Finland, and Norway, as we've talked about. And Group C, the Czech Republic, Latvia, Sweden, and Switzerland. Quickly, let's name our winners from each group and that fourth, the next best team. Matt.
Russia will win Group A for me.
Agreed.
Ditto. Group B.
I got Canada.
Same.
Me too. C.
Sweden.
Ditto.
Copycat. Good.
So there's a sweep there. So those are the three teams that we see winning. Who's going to be the fourth best team of what's left over? Chris, go first.
Czech Republic.
I'll take the U.S.
The Czech Republic?
Well, because I know you're going to pick the United States, so I thought I'd differ.
You want the Czech Republic. Well, at least the team that has 44-year-old Peter Nedved on the team.
Hey, if Peter can still play and make his national team.
This is the same team that left Yuri Hudler off their team for Peter Nedved.
Who are you going to take as the fourth seed?
United States.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the Czech Republic to be different. Thank you.
Okay, but realistically.
Oh, United States, but Czech Republic.
All right. Well, check yourself. Now, we talk about who wins each group. A couple of the X factors.
Hold on. Oh, yeah. Clay, who did you say again?
I said United States as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of the X factors, there's many rule differences. There's large ice. There's no trapezoid. There's a living conditions that these guys are playing two or three in a room, whatever it may be. Who knows? They all have to – actually, do the Russians get a lot better living conditions?
Allegedly, the Russian players are in a better building than Team Canada.
Watch, it's like a palace, and instead Zdeno Chara gets to sleep on three different cots at once or something?
Like going crosswise.
Well, no, they actually measured the bed, and it's shorter than Zdeno Chara.
I thought that was hilarious, though.
Like a good 2 feet.
Poor guy. I feel sorry for his roommate. So we don't know what the matchups are going to be. That depends on the round-robin play. But in the end, you guys, what national anthem are we going to be hearing? And who is silver and who is bronze? Let's start with Matt. I know he doesn't want to go first.
Oh, I don't want to go first.
We need something, though.
It pains me to say it, but I think Russia will win the gold.
Who's your silver?
Also pains me to say it, but Sweden.
And your bronze?
Team Canada.
Chris?
I'm with Matt on the gold medal being Russia. I believe Russia will beat Canada for that gold medal. I believe we get the silver. And I'm
Czech
giving,
for the third?
No, I'm actually going to – I'll give the United States the bronze.
And mine are similar to both yours. I have Russia beating Canada in the final with Sweden beating the States for the bronze medal.
I love Canada. I don't like their odds in this particular instance just because there's the big ice, Russia has the home factor, and I think that there's the possibility because Henrik Lundqvist is actually red hot right now. I think there's the possibility that he can steal a couple games for Sweden, especially some big games for Sweden. That's just my gut instinct.
So Nagano all over again for the Canadians.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we only have a few days to wait and wait with breathless anticipation before we can all be watching Team Canada and believing in the power of you and I.
Here we are at my favorite segment of the entire podcast. We leave it to the end because we always want to go out with a bang, and it is time for Ask CHB. That's hashtag Ask CHB. We go out to Twitter, we go out to Facebook, we ask you, our listeners, our readers, what you think about a specific topic, and we then share the love here on the podcast. So today's question, very much Olympic theme. We just provided earlier on our top three predictions as who wins gold, silver, bronze for the men's hockey in Sochi. And we asked you that same question. So I'm just going to go to Twitter here. And it actually seems to be that most of our listeners are actually on the same page as us. We have Nicholas Calderon, who is at Kikipawa, which is K-I-K-I-P-O-W-A, has Russia gold, Sweden silver, Canada bronze. We have Dylan Nicholson, who is at Radio Codex, Russia gold, Canada silver, USA bronze. And then Peter Antoine, who is at Midway Pete, he says Canada gold, Sweden silver, USA bronze. So generally the same mix of teams. Your thoughts, guys?
I would just like to say that whoever's name is Kiki Powwow just won the gold for me in best Twitter names.
That's Nicholas Calderon.
Very good, Nicholas Calderon.
Yeah, it sounds very clear that everyone, not only us but them, are picking those three of those four teams, Russia, Sweden, Canada, U.S.
Quick question. Do you guys think that everyone is heralding Russia as the gold medal favorites just because it's, quote-unquote, the safe option?
I actually think it has more to do with the fact that how Russia fared in 2010 is actually indicative of how everyone thinks they're going to do now in Sochi. Just because, one, you see the entire organization drastically shift. They have put everything into the gold medal. And I also go and then challenge the fact that had the NHL not signed to go into Sochi, you would have seen pretty much half the Russian players not play this season. They would have just gone to the KHL. They all want this medal, more so than I think Team Canada wanted it in Canada.
Well, we didn't have our prime minister say that this is really the only sport that matters, as Putin did.
Yeah, that's true. Although I have to give a shout out to Putin. I was really expecting him to come riding in on like a horse or tiger, bare chested at the opening ceremonies, but he dressed it down. He wore an overcoat. That was pretty cool. Back to the segment though, SHB. We also asked this question on Facebook, and it seems to be that most of our fans are Canadian because they're all telling us Canada, no doubt. Canada, hope Lou gets another gold. That's from Mitchell Lupichuk, Jonas Damstrom, and then I'm having to go out on a limb here. We have Vietan Nguyen, who says us, Russia, Canada, Dark Horse Sweden. I'm assuming us is Me's. U.S.
Yeah, I was going to say. We can't finish first and third, you know.
Well, I had two Canadian teams. Curtis Reed, though, on Facebook, actually draws to the comment you just shared, Matt. It's easy to say that Russia, Sweden, and Canada in no particular order will medal, but watch out for the USA. I laughed at them 4 years ago, and it came and bit me in the, and I won't say that three-letter word.
He's not laughing now.
No, I mean, that would have been painful, but I think the safe pick might be Russia.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, that's Ask CHB. As always, look for us to ask that question when we're recording, or better yet, why not take the proactive route? Include the hashtag AskCHB on Twitter or on a Facebook page at facebook.com/CanucksHockey, or as I said, on Twitter, @CanucksHockey. Let us know what you want to tell us, and we'll share those comments on the next podcast.
Garth, that was a haiku.
I like AskCHB, but I love this segment. And this is Clay's Haiku Corner, or better yet, CHB Haiku, where we ask you to send in your 17-syllable creations. And we have a couple here. And guys, as always, I want instant reaction. This is from Sedina Tronic out of Washington, D.C. Sends two. One of them I have to censor two words, but I'll do my best on the fly. Here we go. Matt, instant reaction from you about the Canucks. We really do suck. We can't even score for poop. Burn the whole thing down. What do you think?
I feel like you've left some words out and replaced some words with others.
Well, I just don't say those words all the time. But, it's just not my flow.
But it's
flow.
Pretty bang on. I mean, it really spells out the state that the Canucks are in right now. So I can't say I disagree.
You know how bad the Canucks would be is if Clay actually said those words? That's when you know stuff got real.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of getting real, Chris, instant reaction from you. Again from Sedina Tronic. And as a qualifier, use a lot of LOL, but that's, I don't want to use three syllables up on those, so I'm just going to say LOL, and that's LOL. One. Okay, you ready? Here we go. Seven straight losses. Team 1040 callers. LOL. LOL, 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 LOL. Oh, you just did it.
That was the fakest LOL ever.
And do you want me to see your raffle?
No. No.
I really don't.
Especially since you're not wearing any clothes. And lastly, one for both of us to react to. This is my own creation. Here we go. Good time for a break. Less attention on Canucks. Go, Canada, go. Nice and safe.
Yeah, nice and safe. That's what I'm doing. I'm focusing on the positive. That's the nice red jersey with the maple leaf and right in front of it.
That's CHB Haiku. Thank you for your submissions, Sedina Tronic. Always look for the hashtag of CHB Haiku whenever we record a C4 podcast.
Well, here we are. We're at the end of our podcast, one of our more successful ones, in a box with carpet on the walls. It's pretty darn cool.
Sure sounds good today.
It does. We actually, we needed callers today. That's what we needed.
We need to take it to the next level. We could have taken callers.
You know, I think if we ever do this again, we have to have a caller.
Maybe you could wear a collar.
Well, no, I'm not talking. Jeez, man.
We could have got JJ on the phone.
Yeah, we could have dialed out to the deepest, darkest depths of the Canucks.
Did he listen to these things? Oh, he does, right?
Yeah, the first 15 minutes.
Okay.
So we can say whatever we want about him.
Yeah, JJ is a jerk.
Hey, that's five syllables. Keep going.
Jerk.
Jerk, jerk, jerk.
No, la, 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 la.
Yeah, man, this is how bad things have gotten for us as a blog and a podcast. The Canucks aren't doing so well, and we're really running out of material. But I think it is you know, safe to say that we're going to be all looking forward to what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks with the Sochi Olympics. Hopefully, when we come back, because our recording schedule has us every couple of weeks, that we're going to actually be talking to you about some fantastic results for Team Canada. What do you think, Clay?
I'd love to see a gold medal win, and I think we've always talked about those three countries, Russia, Canada, Sweden, and the U.S. make that four countries. But yeah, looking forward to watching some Olympic hockey and not actually having to get up as early as I thought I did until the gold medal game on that Sunday.
I'm just looking forward to not having to watch a boring product in terms of hockey.
Yeah, it's guaranteed to be exciting. I mean, it could be Norway on the ice against Austria, and we'd still love
find it riveting.
Yeah, that's a scary thing. But final words, Matt.
Go Canada, go.
Clayton.
Ditto.
And me? Here we go, Canada. Here we go. Here we go, Canada. Here we go.
Hey!
Yes, that was pretty cool. But I guess I should also thank everyone for listening to us. Let's get our pride on, as our Prime Minister in Parliament did say in 2010. It was okay for us to be a little excited and boisterous, because we can always apologize about it later. So please celebrate proudly, wear the maple leaf with pride, get loud, get proud. Signing off, this is Chris Golden on behalf of Clay as well as Matt for Canucks Hockey Blog. You can find us anywhere around the Smeelosphere. That's CanucksHockeyBlog.com. On iTunes for C4CHB, that's probably where you're listening to this. We're on Facebook, Facebook.com/CanucksHockey. And as always, on Twitter, we are at Canucks Hockey. This is Chris. We're out. And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
Keeping up with us. Amateurs.